Well, welcome back to HealthLink On Air, produced each week by SUNY Upstate Medical University, making the academic difference in healthcare in the Central New York community. And this is your host, Tricia Torrey, every patient's advocate. Well, we're here in the studio this morning with three distinguished gentlemen, longtime doctors. Dr. Welton Gersony is here from New York City to celebrate and recognize Distinguished Alumni Week. Well, you're the Distinguished Alumni Award winner on Alumni Weekend. Welcome.
Yes, it was an exciting weekend.
And Dr. Willard Cohen from, you'll recognize him from Krause Hospital. He's with us also.
Nice to be here.
And Dr. Albert Frankel is also joining us from New Jersey, but here in the studio this morning.
Pleasure to be here, particularly with my old buddies.
Oh, I know. And, you know, I love that story that all three of you grew up together and became doctors together. Well, we talked about how the experiences you've had over all these years have led you to teaching other doctors. But, you know, I also wonder how medicine has changed. When you studied medicine back in the 50s, you were learning one set of things. I imagine anatomy was pretty much the same thing as it is today, but everything else surrounding it might have been a lot different. What would you talk about in terms of changes in medicine and medical care? Dr. Frankel, what about your experience?
Well, there's a lot to talk about, but I'll mention one thing that I think is particularly dramatic, and that is the introduction of technology over the last 40 years. I can remember when you had a simple x-ray, you know, plain gelatin x-ray to look at before you operated on somebody, and then you operated and you found out what the problem was when you got into the cavity you were exploring. That doesn't happen anymore. Our imaging technology is fantastic. We can look into very almost microscopic parts of the body without having to invade the body. And on the other side of the coin in treatment, our treatments have become much more sophisticated. We can operate on people through very small openings, creating much less damage to surrounding tissues and so on.
And quicker recoveries.
And quicker recovery. And that is continuing to develop on all sides of it, so-called minimal surgery.
Minimally invasive surgeries.
Yes.
We've talked about them. And robotic surgeries as well we've talked about. And I imagine you've been exposed to all of those kinds of things, and your students have been too.
Yes.
Absolutely. Very interesting. And Dr. Cohen, what would technology, has it changed in your field?
Has it ever? I was thinking while you were talking that I helped open an intensive care and coronary care unit in a hospital in Syracuse that doesn't exist anymore. And the first patient we admitted, we didn't have bedside monitors, and so I went to the anesthesia department to get one of their operating room monitors. And the nurse who was running the coronary unit said, what is that for?
Wow.
This was 35 years ago. So we brought that big clunker thing and put it to bedside, and the patient had terrible complications, which we never would have picked up without that monitor. That same week, a colleague of mine admitted a very prominent physician with a heart attack. And they said, no, we don't want to put him in that noisy intensive care unit. So we're going to put him unmonitored down at the end of the hall, as far away from the nursing stations he could be. When they went to see him in the morning, he had expired.
Oh.
And no one knew anything about it because
wow.
He was down there where it would be quiet. It was too quiet. So that was kind of a beginning. And technology in terms of the imaging studies that Dr. Frankel talked about is incredible. And bedside technology in terms of abnormalities of heart rhythm has been a really big deal. And measurement of blood pressure in very sick people in the intensive care unit and coronary unit. You couldn't do any of that when the three of us were in medical school.
Isn't that? That's fascinating. Now, you know, it also strikes me that the business of medicine has changed dramatically in these 40 and 50 years. Dr. Gersony, you and I were talking about a lot of the pressures that physicians are under these days.
Yes, and I think to follow up on the technology story, certainly in my field, technology has changed our world completely, whereas 40 years ago, the severe heart disease patients did not survive, and now they virtually all do, and we have something to offer for everybody.
And one of the pressures then becomes you have to learn all that technology.
You have to learn all the technology, and then the side view that is not as optimistic in terms of how medicine is going is the overuse of technology. And we're seeing more and more of that, and there's unnecessary costs, unnecessary testing, often what we'd call defensive medicine, which is something that I could talk to you for another hour about.
Right, I'm sure you could. And I understand what you're saying is you're practicing medicine because there's an insurance company or a lawyer on the other side of it and not just the patient.
But probably the biggest downside of, over technology is the loss of clinical skills. Many physicians in my field, and I'm sure and the others would agree, rely on technology to such a degree that they've lost some of the feel of how to do a good history and physical exam, and the rapport with the patients and the communications are affected. Mm-hmm. And we are become more technologists than doctors. And when we teach, and I'm sure my colleagues feel the same way, they better. we teach to go back to basics, to be a doctor, to be a human being, to be somebody some people can trust, mm-hmm. and then bring in the technology that you can control.
And on behalf of patients everywhere, I say thank you for that point of view, because I do agree with you. Sometimes the technology becomes the rule. A metaphor for that would be trying to decide whether you're going to teach a child their multiplication tables or let them use a calculator. They don't learn the skill.
Exactly right.
And then you lose touch with exactly what the basics are. You know, it strikes me too that patients have changed. I know that patients I talk to, they're empowering themselves, you know, and that's the kind of a buzzword, but they're learning more and more about their own health and healthcare and hopefully some prevention, but a lot more about the diseases they've got as well. How do you see patients have changed, Dr. Frankel?
Well, I think patients, quite correctly, are unhappy with the amount of personal attention they get from the medical profession. And now that I'm a little older, I can look at it from both sides of the coin. Mm-hmm. There's such a tremendous amount of knowledge to be imparted and to be used that you need a lot of different people to do it.
Mm-hmm.
It no longer can you have the one doctor that knows everything that could be known.
Well, there's no way one doctor ever could.
So you really need somebody who can interact with all the specialists and bring together an answer to the patient that the patient feels is really being directed at him.
Mm-hmm.
Just the other day, I went to see a very fine doctor who I like a great deal, and he talked to me for a few minutes. And as I talked to him, I realized that he didn't remember a lot of the things that had taken place before because he didn't read the chart entirely before. He didn't have time.
He didn't have time, right.
And that's one of the problems we have. The structure of medicine today has to be reorganized so that we can get enough time to do what we have to do, both at the technical end and at the personal interaction end.
We'll talk about a conversation that could last another 5 or 6 weeks. You just hit the nail on the head. But let's stick with patients for the moment. Dr. Cohen, what would you say? Have patients, perhaps the patients you were seeing, changed?
Well, when I retired, I'd been in practice about 35 years. And when we all three of us started medical school, someone who was 65 was a very elderly person.
Mm.
And when I retired, all of my patients, except a handful, were over 65, and I was telling a story earlier about my 88-year-old patient who was quite angry at me when I told her I was retiring because she didn't know where she'd find someone to take care of her. So that the practice, the largest, most rapidly growing segment of the American population are people over the age of 85.
Mm.
They're not the largest group of people, but they're the fastest expanding. And so there are all sorts of older patients, I won't say elderly, with lots of problems, and that's markedly changed the practice of people who take care of adult patients.
Well, and if I can explain a little more about that, it's because people are now being treated and surviving at younger ages diseases they might have died from 30 or 40 or 50 years ago because there wasn't treatment.
And they need more time.
Yes, they do.
And there are not enough doctors, especially in primary care anymore. And as we hear even our political candidates talk about expanding medicine and national health insurance and other types of approaches, they have to be aware that it's nice to do this, but you must have the personnel to do it, or the American public will not stand for it because they're not used to 30-second visits. They're not used to the doctor not even quite sure who they are, having to see a different doctor every time.
Right.
In Europe, actually, I was in England with the National Health Group there when I was on sabbatical, And they, those patients are trained not to ask any questions, to expect 3 minutes and out. Mm-hmm. Americans are not trained for that.
No.
And I'm glad, because I don't think that's good medicine.
Right. I was going to say, I don't see it shifting to that anytime soon. We're actually talking about the aging of the population. We've talked to Dr. Sharon Brangman on a couple of occasions. She's a geriatrician, and she talks about the silver tsunami, and that's exactly what you're addressing,
right,
is the aging population.
Good way to put it.
Well, gentlemen, we've run out of time, but what a great conversation. I thank you all three so much for being here to join us this morning. I'm so glad you could return to Syracuse for your alumni weekend. I hope you'll join us again maybe next year for your 51st, 52nd reunion. It would be great.
We enjoyed it very
much. Thank you very much.
Thanks. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. And listeners, we do need to take a break. We'll be back in just a few moments. This is SUNY Upstate's HealthLink on air on 570 WSYR.